Hello, hello, hello.
What is up, people?
Welcome to The Plot Strikes Back. Bum, bum, bum. This is going to be a fun episode. We're covering Dune Part 2 that just came out this weekend. Ooh. So there will be heavy, heavy spoilers.
Yes.
I highly suggest you see the movie first. And that's essentially what we're saying anyways. You should go see this movie because it is a movie worth seeing.
Yes, definitely.
But if you intend to listen to this episode, if you don't care about everything being spoiled in this movie and what our comments and remarks are going to be, then that's on you.
Yeah. Teach their own, but
yeah,
we suggest seeing the movie first.
Sure. And I think some people don't care and some people want to hear what people have to say before they see it themselves. I mean, I've been in that situation before. In certain movies, I still haven't seen yet because I don't like the way they...
Yep.
Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny.
Is one.
The Flash is another one.
Oof. I mean, honestly, you're not missing much with
the Marvels, the Aquaman 2.
I haven't seen those either.
That's why I think Dune is just refreshing.
It is because it's epic. It's big. It is a good story.
Yes.
You know, it's simple.
And we're diving straight into it.
Yes.
So, again, do not proceed further than this. We're prepared to have the movie ruined with spoilers. Yeah. So, to start it off, obviously, this is the second movie that Denis Villeneuve is creating, and we haven't yet received any sort of mentioning of a third part yet. But you said that you saw something that talked about him working on a script for part three.
Well, it's not part three. It's just the second book of Dune, Dune Messiah. And apparently he is, you know, working on a script now for it.
Right.
Which is pretty cool because definitely need to finish telling the story of the Duke of Arrakis, Paul. And I think that's what he wants to do. I mean, it's weird they haven't officially greenlit it, but I'm sure they will this week, this coming week or the week after. But yeah, I mean, after that, it kind of completes the main Paul story for the most part.
Yeah, it definitely has to come sometime in the near future about some sort of follow-up to the movie, because one of the things that we all said yesterday when we saw it was we talked about the ending quite a bit, especially on the ride home too.
Yeah.
And it's certainly interesting because, and just for a disclaimer here, Austin has read the book. I have not read the book. I plan on reading the book. I plan on buying the box set of the first three books that I will definitely go through and read. And then I have every intention of getting the graphic novel volumes. There are three of them that cover the Dune novelization for the three parts in that book.
Yeah.
And that's something that I didn't know until Austin told me recently. And it's, you know, very reminiscent of, say, how the Lord of the Rings trilogy is. There's two books in every book, or two parts in every book that consists of, you know, one complete novelization.
Yeah.
And so I think, you know, these two movies can be, I'll say, compared to Lord of the Rings. It definitely has, or The Hobbit, it definitely has that feel to it. But, you know, I can definitely say, you know, straight off the rip here, is that I definitely don't think these movies come close to the Lord of the Rings trilogies. I think they, you know, in some cases are just as good as The Hobbit, and I am only putting that in context because of the films and then the book comparison, because, you know, there are things that were left out from The Hobbit as a book.
Yeah,
that weren't included in the movie, or things that were changed. And, you know, it's kind of the same thing. When I remember when The Hobbit first came out and the movies came out, I'm like, wait, why were these scenes left out? Why, like, everyone always rips on The Hobbit and Lord of the Rings. Why didn't they just rely on the eagles? Well, in The Hobbit, well, the eagles, well, so you remember and there's a reason why I'm explaining this now in relation to Doom Part 2. You realize in the first Hobbit movie, right, when they're fighting Azog, the Defiler, and like it's at night, the trees, right, and they all jump off into the eagles, and the yeah. eagles, they go to see the Lord of the Eagles, and it's at that point they hear why they can't take them to Erebor, right? And there are reasonings behind that, and we'll dive more into that when we actually review and read The Hobbit again. Kind of the same thing. Why would you leave that out? People kind of need to hear that, because then they go, oh, well, that's... And like, and stop making the memes where it's like, they could just take the eagles to Mordor, you know, yeah. and drop the ring in Mount Doom. No, you can't.
It's not that easy. It's not that easy.
You know, stop trying to find a dumb way to do things.
There are rules in these universes.
Right. And that's just one of those things where like, oh, well, it's fiction anyway. Like, that doesn't mean you can't create a set of rules.
Yeah.
You know? In other IPs, there are plenty of rules. There are rules in Star Wars. There are rules in Pirates. There are rules in Marvel and DC, whatever, right? There's and everything else. And it's good to have those rules. There are rules in Dune that apply. But as we've kind of seen the entirety of the Book of Dune in live action now it's one of those things where we look at things that haven't been translated or things that have been changed from page to film. And kind of like we said in our review of part one, the whole dinner scene was not included yeah. in part one, which I think there, and we kind of explained why that could have been included and should have been included. Maybe the more broken down version of the symbolism behind, you know, Paul's grandfather in the bowl, right? Even though that's all over the place. And it's kind of hinted at ambiguously that that's what got him killed.
Yeah.
They don't really actually say that. So it's one of those things where if you're not a book reader, you don't know that.
Yeah.
So, and I remember as soon as the movie ended, I'm like, all right, what was left out from the book? What's been changed from the book? I read some of the Spark notes last night because I'm waiting for the books to actually arrive so I can actually read them and do my due diligence. and again, what we plan on doing, just for future context, we definitely plan on, both of us are going to read the Book of Dune again. We're going to revisit it, probably also read Messiah, and maybe as like a preemptive notion before the next movie comes out. And yeah. and probably do something too with the graphic novels. Because we've only seen it once, and we're trying to talk about our recollection of seeing Dune Part 2 only one time. And I know other people out there that have been putting out content have seen it, you know, two times now, so they might have a better understanding of things that were missed, or kind of maybe just see it again and go, oh, you know what, let me expand my thought process and my analyzation or breakdowns on these scenes. And and whereas like prior to us talking about Dune Part 1, I mean, we've seen that movie numerous times.
So good.
And I saw it in the theater twice. I've recently went back and watched it a couple times just because it is a great movie.
Definitely have seen that one a handful of times. Yeah,
yeah, for sure. And especially watching it prior to us talking about it, because we have the ability to watch it at will in our own homes.
Yeah.
So for this, it's like, all right, we got to drive to the movie, kind of think about it. We can't really have our phones out taking notes or writing down notes on a pad and pen either. So that's where it kind of makes things a little bit different. But so we're just going to do our best from our memory that we've jotted down to kind of go over things. So to get back into it, you know, again, Hans Zimmer continues to make a great score throughout part two. And interestingly enough, and we talked about the importance of how the score affects a lot of scenes, but there are scenes in this movie that don't have any music, there's no score that's layered over it.
One scene in particular.
One scene, the duel. The duel. And it's by far one of the best scenes in the entire movie. There's great acting between Austin Butler and Timothy Chalamet. Those characters are great. But as I found out, that scene is slightly different in the book.
Mm-hmm.
Because Fade, he cheats in the book and tries to...
I think it's a poison blade.
It's a poison blade from his boot.
Yep.
And he even fails in killing Paul with it. And it's interesting. And I kind of thought about why that wasn't included in the movie. Because it's like when you see the Colosseum scene, right?
Oh, that scene is awesome.
Which, again, another great scene, because you learn that, oh, there's a couple leftover prisoners of war
Atreides.
From House Atreides. Two of them get drugged, so they're limping. But there's a third one that isn't limping. And Fade realizes this. And then he's like, you know what? I see what's going on here. He's like, you're trying to have me killed here.
I should drown you in your bath.
Dude, man. Listen, before we kind of jump around, Austin Butler was definitely a highlight in this movie. He absolutely killed it. And I think
for sure the best
like addition to this to the Dune
movies. Yeah, I mean his I would say second best in the movie acting wise, but
yeah, well,
he was good.
We're going to get into our favorite actors or moments in this review here, but you know, one of the interesting things too is I'll just kind of briefly say about Austin Butler is, you know, his sheer ability to act and obviously seeing the things that he's done so far in film between the things I've seen him in Elvis or, you know, I'm watching Masters of the Air right now on Apple TV Plus, which he's great in. And just, I mean, you can see he's got a good acting range, you know, and I think this is just the beginning. Like, as we said before, when actors start to get on this train, you start seeing them in everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're going to see him in quite a few things to come. You know, we just said there's like this new biker
I can't remember what, show Riders?
Or movie that has like Tom Hardy in it and a few other people.
Michael Shannon too.
Yeah. It's interesting. So going to see what that's about too. And you see in the Colosseum scene where he's like very cocky. He's like, oh, you know what? I see what's going on here. Cool. Let me take off my shield. So I'll fight you fair and square.
Yep.
And so I think I understand the reasoning behind Denny's choice to not have him have this poison blade, because it's like, you see from the display of sheer skill in the Colosseum where he's like, I don't need to cheat. And if you're going to try and throw something at me, I'm psychotic. I'll beat you with my skill with a blade.
Yeah.
You know, so then he does the same thing with Paul. And I mean, listen, you know, Paul gets a couple of good licks in there, but it was kind of that moment that Paul almost looked, I mean, he was stunned. He was shook laying on the ground with his head bleeding as Fade looks over and sees Johnny.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's just your pet.
He's your pet. Yeah. And it's like, damn, you're going to let him talk about your woman like that, Paul? Man, act like a duke and get up.
Yeah.
And so then he does, and he gets stabbed like in the
stomach,
left stomach, you know, and then he gets stabbed again, like in the upper right chest area, like kind of like right, looks like it was like right below the collarbone.
Yeah.
So like neither were lethal, I guess.
But like, ow.
But like, yeah, holy crap, that probably hurt like hell.
I mean, you heard it in his breathing too.
Yeah. He was significantly slowed down, but he used, it's sort of like that tactic when he's also stopping the blade with his hand too, as it's just being driven in. He's like, you know what? I'm going to use this to pull out the blade in my gut and I'm going to stab it right into him.
Yep.
And that's where I was like, he says something to Paul, like, you know, you fought like valiantly or something like
that,
you know, something along those lines. I'm paraphrasing, but you can see that as we find out in the movie, cousin to cousin,
mm-hmm.
It was a damn good fight. Yeah, and it was definitely great to see both actors have, you know, trained for that. And you were saying that Austin Butler trained for like a month.
No, a couple months.
A couple months.
Yeah, yeah. He trained pretty, I think he started training with a blade like almost as soon as he got cast,
which is awesome.
Yeah. Super cool.
And that's sort of like, you know, what like Hayden Christensen did with Star Wars. He practiced day in and day out, you know? So I love to see that and love to hear about that devotion from actors. Because it's like, oh, put the stunt guy in because he's bald and you can kind of get away with it.
Yeah.
You know, with makeup and prosthetics. Kind of same thing for, like, for Timothy Chalamet. Like, it's great to see them actually commit to the role in the combat side of things. But so that was just kind of one scene that didn't have any music. And I can't remember if any other scenes didn't have any.
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah. Again, that's something that we'd have to kind of pay more attention to in our second viewing. But, you know, most of the same actors involved. Obviously, we had some, you know, additional people of high name, right? With Austin Butler playing Faedorotha Harkonnen, who's the, you know, Baron's youngest nephew. We got Florence Pugh, who's Princess Irulan. I think if I'm pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah.
Who's the Emperor's daughter, who's mm-hmm. set to be Empress. Then we've got Christopher Walken, Shaddam the Fourth, is the Emperor. Foo Fighters.
Dune.
Part two. We're gonna get into it. And then there's a couple other minor actors here and there that had decent parts in, but you know, it was, I think, one of the most disappointing characters and actors that we expected more from that was supposed to be in it was Anya Taylor-Joy.
Honestly, I was biggest let down by the lack of Emperor scenes.
Yep, that is on my disliked list here. So let's talk about the characters. Who were your...
Oh, like last time?
Yeah, who were your top three characters?
Top three?
We'll do top three. We'll be a little more lenient now.
All right, top three in order.
Yes.
Paul.
Agreed, same.
He was... My older brother said the movie completely changes tone-wise after he drinks the Water of Life. I agree. It does.
Yep.
And it gets awesome at that point. Not that it wasn't before, but it gets straight like
his character changes.
We're on 10. Yeah.
Yeah.
He fully embraces being the prophet, you know, that's going to save Arrakis.
Total attitude
change. Or the Fremen word for it, Dune.
Right.
So he's at the top of the list. Austin Butler, for sure, number two.
Yep.
Number three, I'll probably go with the Baron, because I didn't like Stilgar that much in this one, because he felt it felt too like he was the comedic relief.
You know, I thought more
in
about
parts,
that.
And I'm like, that doesn't seem like the Stilgar that I read in the book. But it's been a minute since I read the book, and you know, but that was just my first. I was like, that doesn't seem like him. No.
You were telling me that last night, and I think Stilgar is my number three favorite character.
Mm-hmm.
Just because, again, I think, you know, Javier Bardem's acting was great. I mean, I think the acting across the board was great. But I think I kind of know what you meant, because when I was reading some of the, you know, Cliff Notes, Spark Notes about Stilgar, and especially in parts two and three, kind of like what you were saying, his character and sort of attitude, though he's not in it a lot in part one of the movie, it's different than what we see here in part two of the movie.
Yeah.
And like, I wonder if it was just like the way those lines in the dialogue kind of, maybe just the way the movie was kind of pieced together, where those parts were in, I think, like the part we initially thought of was when he's like, you know, I'm not Muad'Dib, I'm not the Messiah. And he's like, oh, who but to say how humble he is to say I'm not the Messiah, you know, like I'm not Muad'Dib, like he's not here to save us. But like, of course he is. Only the prophet would say that.
Yeah.
You know, and it comes off comical because people did chuckle in the theater.
And I'm just like, that's not.
But I wonder if that's just the, like, again, if that was either like the directing, like a director's call or what, you know. And again, I can't speak 100% word for word dialogue or moments in the novelization because I haven't read it, but I think that's just the way it kind of came off. Although that's the way it does seem in the movie. But then I think it's just this. I don't want to quite call him a fanatic, but he was so committed to his faith that and beliefs that he was just unwavering.
Yep.
You know, because there were parts where, you know, remember when he's like, okay, you don't need to impress, you know, but you, the, now it's the test from the desert. Now Shai Halud tests you.
Yep.
And there, you know, it was like Chani and the other woman that was, I forget her name, but she was joking around about it. And he goes, get the biggest one, you know, and he's like, stop, you know, stop joking. Like, this is serious.
And then he ends up calling a grandfather worm.
Yeah, he's like, not that big. Like, you know, and they're all like, oh my God. Like, you know, and so that was one of those things where it's like, some parts he is serious, but in other parts he is a little, there's like a light humor of spice,
yeah,
pun intended, involved in it,
mm-hmm.
You know? Cause then like when he's serious about talking to Lady Jessica, he's like, well, listen, you can either be the Reverend Mother here or die. Your call. And it's like, oh yeah, that's not funny, because what choice do you have, yeah, at that point? Like, you either go through the prophecy or you die. And they basically take your water, throw it in this giant pool of water that ends up going to waste, mind you, when the Harkonnens are like, let's just use artillery on this whole mountainside, which, you know, it kind of talks, that whole scene too kind of talks about the difference between Robin and Fade, because
mm-hmm.
as crazy as they try to make Fade seem as this, you know, psychopath, Robin, who was like this angry dog, gets put in his place, and you can also see isn't very strategic. He's like a big dum-dum.
Yeah, and he's kind of a drunk.
Yeah. You know, so it's like like when they're already hitting the Fremen's with the artillery, and Robin walks in and he's like, what are you doing here? He goes, in the morning, he's like, what are you doing up in the morning, or something like that, right?
Oh yeah, he's like, he walks in, he's like, what are you doing here? He's like, well, it's early in the morning, what are you doing here?
Yeah.
And then puts him in his place, makes him kiss his boot.
Kiss my boot.
Or die.
Yeah. Yeah, he has his blade to his neck, and you could see like blood dripping down. So, you know, it's definitely very interesting to kind of see, you know, these characters, and I know kind of what we're saying kind of blends into some of our likes and minor likes / gripes with the movie, because it's like, as much as I liked Christopher Walken as the Emperor, he barely had any screen time.
Yeah, no, that was my number one gripe.
And so that's something I was fascinated to try and read in the book. I'm like, how much is the Emperor in the book? You know?
I mean, he's not in it a lot, but it felt like there was still, like, they needed way more Emperor.
Well, yeah, and I think one of the things I was, at least
in the first part, maybe then.
Yeah, because I was reading something about, you know, especially with the ending, because I think at the ending, that's when he was in the movie the most.
Because he ends up going to Arrakis.
Yes.
With, obviously, as you see, he goes to Arrakis to meet with Maudie.
Yeah, and there's a lot, like, I from what I read is that a lot of that confrontation is, there's a lot more to it, you know, and obviously we said this about part one, and I said the same thing. As soon as the movie ended, it should have been longer.
Yeah. Yeah. That was the first thing you said to me.
Yeah. And it's like, and I don't get, cause when you look at how big of a book and how complex that book is, the fact that it's like an 800 page or 900 page book, right?
Yeah. I think it's 800 and something.
It's like, when you only devote about 5 hours of film to that, I don't think it's enough. You know, I thought each part of the book with three parts should have easily had at least 2 hours.
You know, the original...
And there's your trilogy.
The original Dune that didn't get made by Jaworski. I can't remember his name. But
I know you're talking about. But
yeah. He said it needed to be a 10-hour movie. And that was part of why it didn't get made.
Obviously. Yeah, but that's the thing. That's when I just find some of these comments out there are like, oh, it's as good as Lord of the Rings. And I'm like, stop. Just stop. It's just, listen, it's one thing if you're going to have a theatrical cut and then an extended version. But as we said earlier, Denny's like, nope, we're not. I don't, whatever I cut in the theater is the only cut on top of that. But then you have your son who's saying like, And you're saying about a younger generation that want longer movies.
Man.
Your own son said this, didn't he? So why are you making a shortened movie when you could have included a lot more? And again, we're not asking for another hour, although I think another hour to each movie could have easily been warranted.
Oh, yeah.
With more detail, more scenes. You know, it's like the ending of the battle, and we're kind of getting into dislikes here, but it is what it is. We'll go over our likes too, just for...
Well, yeah, of course, absolutely.
For balancing here, but, you know, it's... Because I think this is very relative of characters, where the characters, and some of them deserved more screen time. I think there's certain scenes overall that deserved more screen time. Things that weren't included deserved screen time, period. You know, and I'm only kind of going off of scenes that I've just read about after the fact. I think once I finally read the book and we do another take on this,
yeah,
another, either it's a full podcast episode or a YouTube video here that's, you know, maybe more broken down and analyzed, tit for tat, I think that's when the truthfulness to the lore in the movie can be analyzed. And I'm sure other people out there are probably doing it, but it is what it is. Like, I think, again, it's not that Denis didn't do a good job with this movie. I just think it could have been better. You know, like,
it's still a really good movie.
Sure.
It's still epic. Beautiful. It's still crazy good, but like,
this is going to be a hot take. You know. I think this movie cinematically is better and more masterful than it is with the story.
Yeah, I'd agree.
This is a beautiful cinematic piece of art that we've gotten here.
My hot take is that I like part one better.
Yeah, I think part one is better than part two.
However, I think it can be looked at and / rated differently if you watch them together as one full movie, which is what I plan to do once it gets released.
Yeah, I think that's something we're going to need to do, is we'll watch them back to back. We'll have the book read by then.
Oh, yeah.
You know, so that way we can really give a in-depth, you know, full analysis breakdown, more so than we're even kind of giving now. And that's not to disregard what we're talking about now. And hopefully those listening aren't thinking the same. And, you know, and again, we're really not harping on this movie in a bad way. It's just, I think when we're trying to really give it a fair analyzation here, like, you have to include these critiques, you know, because I think a lot of what I've read is just, it's amazing, it's beautiful, it's masterpiece, it's blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, just saying that isn't good enough to give it a higher rating unless you're telling us why.
Yeah.
But there again, as people, it's a 10 out of 10. And I'm like, respectively, I disagree. Not to saying that if people are giving it a 10 out of 10 is invalid. That's not what I'm saying. But there are very few movies, I think, that exist in reality that are considered perfect. There are movies that are near perfect. And again, we've kind of talked with them when we were going through our favorite movie list, you know, a couple months ago. But I think when you're giving a movie like this more time, or when you're giving a novel that's considered one of the best, if not the best, science fiction novelization ever, that inspired so many other movies like Star Wars.
Yeah.
You gotta adhere to it as best as possible. But as I found out when I was like, did the movie end the same way in the book? And you're like, yeah. And I'm like, that kind of sucks. And you're like, see, why are people calling it the best science fiction movie or science fiction novel? I'm like, well, because of everything else that probably happens in the book.
And it's still, yeah, my only gripe with the Dune book is how abrupt it ends. I'm like, wait, that's the ending? That's how you end this? And, you know, I am definitely going, well, when I do reread it, I'm going to, you know, go in with a blank mind again, like I did the last time. But, you know, it was, yeah, it was, that's how it ended.
Which is, you know, it's the final battle, which parts of it were
epic.
It just seemed so short.
Not long enough.
And then the entirety of the ending was felt rushed. Like it was a, like the pace was rushed, which I had an issue with. And then the whole thing was just
over.
Over. And it was so anticlimactic. I'm like, what? Are you kidding me? Like, ended the same way the first one did.
Mm.
This is just the beginning. Cut. Oh, I disagree with what you said, Paul. I'm going to ride Shai Halud. Cut. What? Come on, bro. So again, it's a gripe. It's something I don't like about the movie. And knowing that's how the book ends, I don't like the book ending as well. It's just, it is what it is. And I'm sure, again, there are other parts of the movie I absolutely love. Same thing. I'm sure there are other parts of the book. And, you know, again, sparkness what I've read about the book. I'm like, this sounds fantastic.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I can't wait to dive into it all and get complex.
The book is still, you know, in my top five favorite books.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's fantastic.
I'm sure it'll jump up there in my top faves, pieces of literature as well. But, you know, again, mentioning the cinematography, there were a number of shots, moments that were
beautiful.
God, just gorgeous to see on screen. Like,
and just the scale of everything is,
oh yeah,
the same, which is massive, if not a little bit bigger.
Yeah.
And it's just beautiful, some of these shots.
Yeah, you know? Like, I mean, I think everything that ever concerns Shai Halud was awesome to see. You know, from seeing the, you know, the grandfather worm to seeing three of them burst through the cloud of sand.
Yep.
And then when you see, I think I counted 10 of them at one time when they're attacking the
spicing grounds.
Well, not even that. The part at the very end.
The emperor's.
Yeah, the Sardaukar kind of fortress.
The makeshift little
base. Yeah.
That was kind of cool.
Yeah. And that's another thing. When you realize this, the ship that's coming in, it's like, oh, it doesn't look that big. But once it starts to set everything up and then it's kind of just sitting there, and I'm like, you know, that's a
massive.
Emperor really brought everything up.
He brought his whole ass army.
Yeah. The entire,
for what?
Just to
get buried in sand.
Yeah, just to.
Losers.
Your efforts were folly. You know, you opposed no threat to the Fremen and the Duke of Arrakis. Muad'Dib. What other parts, what other cinematic parts struck you?
As far as like the well, definitely after he drinks the water of life and climbs that rock.
Oh, yeah.
With the tens of thousands of Fremen, you mm-hmm. know, beneath him. That was awesome. I got chills during that. There was everything with the Harkonnen arena was beautiful because it, I could be wrong, but I think it was shot with infrared lenses. But that's the natural sunlight of the GD Prime planet. So it looks like that all the time. And I think that's why they're all bald and hairless, because of that light. They look weird, but
yeah,
Baron in that scene. And I saw this thing on Twitter where it was from an episode of Family Guy of Brian. He's got Peter on the forklift. And he's getting him outside the door, and the caption was the Baron showing up for Fade's birthday.
That's funny.
So that whole scene was epic because you had the music, you had the scale of that arena and how massive huge. It was. And anything with Shai Halud, of course, was just, I mean, the seats were shaking.
Oh, yeah.
It was awesome.
It was loud. And
the duel scene. Because the sun's rising.
Yeah.
And you get this really cool shot that they show a couple times of Fade and Paul, may my knife chip and shatter, you know, as they duel. And that's pretty cool. But you also get a really cool shot towards the end when everyone bows after the Emperor kisses Paul's ring.
Yeah.
And it's only Paul, the princess, and Shani standing. Everyone else is bowing. And then Paul just looks back at Shani before she leaves and walks out. That's a pretty cool scene.
Yeah, there are some cool moments with when they're in the Siege. I think it's Siege Tabor.
Yep.
And especially when you see the scale at which everyone is congregated for that meeting, and then that Paul
see how huge comes it into is. It.
Yeah, and you realize like no, there are millions of Fremen here, much like Duncan Idaho said. You know, which you know, part of me was like, I hope he's not dead in part one, even though he went down and with his eyes open. I was like, all right, well.
All I will say is read Dune Messiah.
All right. Okay. Well, we'll have to see. But yeah, I'm trying to think off the top of my head what else is cool. I mean, like, yeah, this is a scale. Like, when you see even the beginning, when you see the Harkonnens using their suits to climb up the.
Oh, my God. Yeah, the flight suits.
The mountain and everything like that. And yeah, I think some of the shots with, again, like the Harkonnen ships and just like when they're launching, you know, attacks. Just, yeah, again, it's that I want to see it. That's what, another reason why I want to see it again is just to pay closer attention to some of the subtleties to the cinematography.
Yeah.
Because that's something we got to do with part one since like we own it. So it's just like, yeah, I want to give that the same respect. But you're kind of getting into more of, we'll say like the parts. Let me talk a little bit about our gripes, which I have a couple other things to say. But what were your, or at least some of your, because I'm sure we'll probably agree on the scenes that we liked, the moments or the parts of the story that we liked. And I think one of the parts that comes to my mind is, which we see it a couple times, so we can see how Paul has basically conveyed how he knows the Harkonnens are going to move. And these attacks on the spice crawlers, you know, but it's so cool, like, to see how he's strategically fighting them and getting the Fremen to attack. And like after time and time again, like it's basically halting all the spice production, which is cool to see also for the story and the plot. And then up goes to the point where we see Gurney.
Yep.
Come back, because it's like I'm watching, like, when does Gurney come?
I was waiting for that.
Yeah, same. And then once it's like, I know your footsteps, old man.
Yep.
That reunion comes back into fold. But what other scenes or parts of the film did you like?
Everything with the Harkonnen was just, it seemed brutal. Just in. So I liked a lot of those scenes.
Like everything like that consisted of them?
Yeah, whether it was Fade, whether it was Rabba, whether it was the Baron. I mean, and Fade walked around, like, had like a posse of like cannibal, freaking psycho, crazy, bald women that Fade would just kill people randomly.
Yeah.
So he would have them sent to his quarters for his women to eat, pretty much.
Yeah.
So he was brutal. And so that was pretty cool. But honestly, God, I know I already talked about it, but my favorite scene was probably the Harkonnen arena. That whole sequence was my favorite part for sure.
It was definitely a sight to behold.
Yeah, it was sick.
Yeah.
But that was definitely probably for sure my favorite part.
You know, it's interesting when you see and you hear more about the Bene Gesserit, the Reverend Mother, I don't know, Mohaim, I think her name.
The mean one.
Huh?
The mean one.
Yeah. The one who is going around manipulating everything, essentially. You know, truth-sayer to the Emperor, right? Yep. She tests Fate as well, right? Yeah. Put your hand in the box, boy.
Yep.
And then we don't see it. That was something I was like, I wonder if that whole experience is in the book, because
I think it is.
The who's that actress? That's,
I can't remember her name, and I didn't even know she was in the movie until I saw it. I was like, is that?
She was in so much. It's, her name is, I'm gonna probably botch it, but it's Leah say do. It's interesting to see how Lady Fenring, who is a Bene Gesserit that's with and has been keeping tabs on Fade, right? Because he's also a prospect. And like they say, is how well will, and how can he be controlled? And essentially, you know, manipulated. What can they force him to do or make him do in order to kind of go through the whole scheme? And the other thing that kind of just made me think about, my man, the Bene Gesserit are the real villains.
Yeah.
Through the entirety of the story of Dune.
Yeah.
You know,
they're the ones behind the scenes that are making all that happen.
Yeah, they're the puppet masters, and literally everyone. It's like, even the Emperor. Sure, you have the title of Emperor, but you're a puppet on strings too.
Yep.
So, and it's weird how, I don't know, like just the way it's written, but it's interesting like to see that no one dares think, what if we just got rid of all the Bene Gesserits? We factor them out of the equation, and then we go on our merry ways to conduct business through the universe.
You know, that's another reason why I want you to read the book so bad, is because they explain more about the Bene Gesserit, a lot more.
And that's something that I felt like that was missing in the movies, which, again, if you add more time in the movies, you can ascertain those questions,
yep,
those answers. And again, you extrapolate the text to the film, much like was done in Lord of the Rings.
So not that hard.
It's really not, you know, and it's like, I get it. It's that directing call, the writing call at the end of the day to the person making the film. But there again, we have every right to critique those things, because if you're trying to adhere to the source material and you leave those things out, well, people are going to say, I wanted to see this in there and you didn't deliver this part.
Yep.
And I wanted to see it. You know, so that's all fair play in my eyes. But as I was kind of saying, where Fenring manipulates and essentially uses the voice on Fade when they're walking, mm-hmm, and he's like, how did I end up here? And then she's like, I'm going to my room. Yeah. Are you coming? And she's like, the bloodline has already been secured. You know, it's a female. So Fade knocks her up.
Nice.
And, you know, there's another mini Fade girl coming at some point.
Yep.
Which I don't know if that ever makes an appearance in the books. But
I can't remember, honestly.
It's like at that point, minor character because of Paul and everything like that. But yeah, I think another part that I liked was when they're making Lady Jessica drink the water of life.
Oh yeah, to become the Reverend Mother of the Fremen.
Right, and Nick, you were saying before, like, not that it's a spoiler, but you wanted, I kind of asked for it too. I'm like, well, how does that all happen? You're like, well, basically what ends up happening is there's a transference, and now Lady Jessica absorbs the knowledge from the previous,
it's like knowledge, memories, Reverend, pain of all the past.
Right. And right before that happens, the old Fremen Reverend Mother is like, what have we done? She's pregnant.
And then dies.
At that point, I was like, oh, yep, yeah. Like, they didn't know that. And that's why I was like, wondering, is she going to tell them that I'm pregnant? Like,
and as you see, all that spice goes directly into the womb.
That was a great way of telling it cinematically.
Yeah.
Where you didn't need words to convey what was happening here. Because at that point, I mean, that was one of my favorite parts, as I'm saying. Like, I was worried about, like, oh, damn, is this going to affect the baby? You know?
And
also why you don't do drugs when you're pregnant.
But, yes. Especially the spice.
Yeah.
Whenever the dying Reverend Mother says, what have we done? I'm convinced that she says that because, yes, she is pregnant, but also because when that baby is born, she is going to be born with all of the knowledge, memory, and pain of all the other past Reverend Mothers. So she is born like so mature and powerful that she is reacting to that as in like, what have we done? We've made something evil.
Well, yeah. Like it's like they robbed this child of growing up. You're literally like, she's not going to have a normal life, a normal childhood that she can have of that stature because who she is, you know, she's the daughter of, you know, Lady Jessica, a Reverend Mother. Now she's the sister to the Duke of Atreides, you know, Muad'Dib, Usul, like, you know, someone who's very, very important to the entirety of the universe.
Yep.
That's his sister that is, has all the knowledge now. So you're saying like, she's, you know, more or less this freak of knowledge and has ascertained this power that, you know, it's like, and this is a spoiler, but you're like, she's more powerful than even Paul is, which when you see the ending of this movie, and it's like, again, one of the best parts of the whole movie was when, you know, the Emperor's there, the Empress is there, the other Bene Gesserit, the mean one, is there, and she says something to Paul, and Paul's like, silence!
And just sends her back.
Silence! You know, and like, she gets so shook that she just falls backwards as if like, he punched her with words. And the meme that's kind of going right now is like, even Austin Butler's face with no eyebrows, he's like, damn.
Yep.
Cuzzo hit her hard.
Yep.
And I thought about it, I'm like, you know, he was probably happy that that Paul did that because of the torture that he was put through with the box.
Yeah.
You know, with Lady Fenring.
Yep.
So, and you just see like, no, Paul's has mastered, seemingly mastered the voice now, because whereas like Moheim used it against him in his own house when it's like, how dare you use that on me and like my own house.
Yep.
And now he just was like, yeah, I'm gonna give you back a taste of your own medicine.
Yeah.
You know.
Just not long enough. But awesome.
Yeah.
Epic.
And again, like there's I liked a lot of the parts that consisted of the tests, the building with like, you know, Paul's relationships. You know, I guess one of the other interesting things that, you know, I kind of had a little bit of a gripe about, and they kind of my observation with Zendaya, you know, and her relationship with Chani, it was like, she falls in love with him.
Oh yeah.
And you were kind of telling me some of the differences that happened in the book, and that, and while you told me that after the fact of the movie, because I'm like, one of my gripes in the first movie was like, she was barely in it, and like, she didn't really have any feeling towards him in the first movie, especially after he kills Jameis. So it's like, once he's finally accepted to be one of them, even though at one point she's like, you're not Fremen, and he's like aren't I though?
Nope.
It's like, by localized blood, you're not, because you're literally from a different planet.
Yeah.
So it's like, he's accepted as one of their own, you know, and obviously he's the Lisan al Gaib. So it's like, as they all chant and say, and it's interesting to see, like, there's a bit of a divide, and, you know, it kind of gets to that point where, like, even the Messiah would say he's, you know, he is the Messiah because he's not, he's being so humble and noble about it. But they all kind of start to believe more. You know,
because they see it.
Because they're seeing with their eyes, even though like the people who didn't need to see it with their eyes and just kind of, again, they relied on their faith, were in support of him. It was kind of like an extra layer of like, for again, that's why I liked Stilgar, where he's like, he believed it, but then once he saw him actually get to that level or do these things, like when he's seemingly dead after he drinks the water of life, and Lady Jessica's like, no, he's alive, but his vitals just basically seem like he's dead.
Cause his like heartbeat was beating so low that.
Yeah. And then she says, drink it, to
use the voice on.
She uses the voice on Shanine. I was like, oh damn, like. But she's basically saying, nope, this needs to happen, so you need to drink it. I'm gonna use the voice, manipulate you, force you to do it. And then what's her name? Desert Spring.
Yeah, her other name, her Fedaiken name means tears of spring tears in the desert spring tears. Or Desert Spring.
Yeah, it's Desert Spring.
And then the prophecy is when he comes back, he'll come back with the tears of a desert spring, which happens when she cries.
Yeah, she cries.
And mixes a tear with the life, puts it on his lips, and comes back.
Yep.
I'm back, baby!
But when he sees that, like, Stilgar is there, and he's like, listen, Al-Gaib, like, you know.
And then they all bow.
They all bow, exactly. You know, except for Chani.
Now she leaves.
She's like a...
She slaps him, then leaves, actually.
Yeah.
Pretty hard, too.
Yeah, that was a good-sounding slap. Gotta admit, you know. I don't know if Zendaya actually hit him, but...
Well, we should probably factor in the fact that they were in a cavern. Echoes.
Yeah, so it probably was still, like, you know, I'm sure you could slap someone and not it not echo, but... anyway, I think Zendaya was good overall in this movie.
Yeah, she was good.
You know, obviously, and again, this is one of the reasons why I want to read more about her character in the book, because of the choices that Denis kind of put her through in the movie, especially, you know, at the end where she doesn't want Paul to commit to power, especially like when she sees the atomic arsenal that Gurney tells them about. And it's basically like, this is tied behind your genetics. Only you have the power to use this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they only use it once in the movie.
Yep.
You know, to destroy the mountain that basically allows the worms to come in and, you know, causes a distraction, you know, debris flies. It's a bit of a smoke screen. And it's like, they probably could have just launched them all. You know, I don't know if they plan on using them later, which I was like, that's my thought, is that they might, but don't tell me yet.
Yeah.
But, you know, Chani doesn't want any of that to happen. She's like, I don't want you to go through with this part of the prophecy, like, because you said you didn't want to do that, and now you are.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like when they're in the
siege.
When they're in the siege, and she's like the only one in the entire place of millions of people. She's like the only one that isn't standing or isn't bowing. And then Gurney, like, what did Gurney say again? He says, like,
I can't remember off the top of my head.
It's like, basically he says something like, I have a place in this fight because he gave me this,
he gave him the scar.
He gave him the,
killed his entire friends and family. Yeah.
Family. So for Robin. So it's like, and that was a great moment too, when we get that showdown again. It's pretty short, but we get a little duel again. Thanos beats Drax in a fight.
Yep.
And with Josh Brolin, stabs Dave Bautista's character, like, right in the throat.
Yep. That's what he deserves.
Yep.
Harkonnen
kills him. And, you know, the other interesting part too was, which was pretty great, when you see the Harkonnens before the Emperor, right, on the steps of the throne, which I know you were saying in the book, you loved the way the Emperor's throne was described. Kind of seemed a little lackluster in the film.
Yeah.
I was expecting a more grand, like, look or appearance of the throne.
You know, because I remember, and I could be wrong, maybe it's in Messiah, but I remember the throne being a literal, like, carved out of green jewel.
Interesting.
And it's a literal, like, just, it's a green, like a dark green, like, throne that is carved from a crystal, pretty much.
See, something like that.
And it didn't look like that. And I was like, huh, it looks very, I love the look of Christopher walking in the throne.
No, yeah, no.
You know, but the throne didn't look.
His garb or anything like that.
Yeah, it didn't look like how I would have pictured it.
You know what would have been cool? To see this, you know, even dark green hue of, in that part, because a lot of the movie has the same palette because of Dune itself.
Yep.
You know, there's a lot of, you know, there's gray, especially with the Harkonnen,
not gray, white, gray, but white, it's orange and dark, brown.
Orange or brown. Yeah, you know, sand, colors of sand, right? It's like to have this, and I think it would have been really cool for the sake of symbolism, where like you've got this green throne in the movie. That's the one thing that stands out. It's like when you look like a black and white photo of like a beautiful woman, and the only thing that's colored are her red lips. That's what stands out. Yeah. That's what like shows the beauty of it, right? Or like or maybe like a woman's eyes. That's like blue or green or something like that. Like, I feel like that symbolism of the throne being green. It's like green. What can green be associated with? Paradise. What's mentioned in the movie? Green paradise, as what Paul wants to bring back to Dune, to restore that. How can he help restore that? Through being emperor. What's the throne of? Or made of? It's like this green crystal or green jewel, right?
Yeah.
I think there would have been some really cool artistic symbolism to include, and you know, we didn't get that.
You could have done that. You did it with the bull in the first part.
Yeah, no, sure. You know, so, and again, like, that's just something that we're able to look at after the fact, after a movie's made. And again, I can't slight Denis Villeneuve for not doing that. It's just, it's like, man, I wish I would have, you know, included that. But yeah, maybe he could in the next movie.
Yeah, like I said, I couldn't remember if it was in Messiah or if it was in actually Dune or not. But
maybe we'll get that, which would be kind of cool.
Like there's a scene in the movie where it's a vision Paul's having, and people are bowing to a painting of Duke Leto Atreides and his skull. That's something that I remember from Messiah.
Interesting.
Yeah, like a future vision.
Interesting. Well, it's sort of like the same thing where like, I loved the fact that, you know, we've got this like blue highlight from the poison because it's so luminescent and it kind of
so pure.
Yeah, it comes at you in the screen. It's I mean, I don't want to just be too on the nose, like it's very noticeable, but it's something that is just nice to see change in from the color palette we're just so used to. But so I think with the blue poison, essentially,
yeah,
it's kind of nice to see that on screen. But another scene I liked that was, again, I don't want to say comical, but it obviously has its meaning when Paul kind of goes on a bit of a rant in front of everyone. He's like, you know, no one here can challenge me. And I was like, oh, and I think Lady Jessica says like too harsh or, you know, like back off.
Yeah. Like too coming in like too hot.
Too hot. Yeah.
And then everyone takes out their knife.
Yeah.
And then he singles out one person and pretty much reads his exact mind and thoughts. And
yeah.
They like, instantly bow.
He says, the son of Gaib, and he kneels, and then everyone else just kneels after that because it's like,
it's true.
Yeah, like no, everything he said was
dude.
Yeah. You know, and it's like, what did you used to call us? But it's Dune. It's like, what was your grandmother? She died at an age of like 9 or 11. Like he just goes on a whole list of like who you are in
only
your life.
Like personal information that he would know.
Yeah. And
that entire scene is just, I mean, amazing, that whole scene.
Yeah, I forget what scene it was, but I literally had chills on from it. I was like, dude, I just got chills from this.
Probably that scene.
It could have been, yeah. You know, overall, there's a lot of great moments in this movie. There's a lot of great parts. There's some great dialogue. You know, I think the relationships that these characters have in the movie are great. And you know, another interesting part is, that's obviously very intriguing too, is how Lady Jessica talks to her daughter in the womb.
Oh yeah.
And then Paul's like, what is she saying now? And she's like, she says you're a bad liar. You know, and again, it's like, well, it's a power that Lady Jessica has from, you know, being a Bene Gesserit, but also
now being a Reverend Mother, but also now being pregnant now, freaking in the womb.
Yeah, you got a power baby.
Spice in the womb. Power baby. Yeah.
You got a power baby in your womb that knows everything. And then, you know, there's the vision. And the one scene that we get Anya Taylor-Joy in is, you know, it says to Paul, you are not prepared for what's to come. And then, but also says, I love you. And it's
one scene.
What's her name? Aaliyah Atreides.
I think so, yeah.
You know, again, to include her in the credits and the story, it's like you can't not have a follow-up to this.
Yeah. Well, I guess when Denis offered Florence the princess role, he was like, it's not that big of a role in this one, but in the next one it is, which is true. I mean, it plays a role in the continued story that takes place in Messiah.
Messiah, yeah. And I think I remember reading somewhere between parts one and two that's what he wanted to do, is to go into Messiah.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
and then after Messiah, he would be done, because that's the Paul Atreides story, pretty much.
Right, and I think for the sake of, again, for and I know it might seem like we're being a little too harsh on certain parts, or like we're really kind of coming down on the criticism, but I think a lot of, and understand that a lot of what we're saying is very passionate, because, you know, and especially for Austin, like, because he's read the book, and, you know, I've known a lot about Dune for some time now, and I know parts of it, and obviously it's like, you know, these movies are better Star Wars movies than the sequel trilogy will ever be.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, we need something like this in our lives from a cinematic standpoint, you know, and it is a great story. It's based off, again, one of the best sci-fi books ever created. And, you know, and I understand that there are six books total, and there was supposed to be a seventh one, according to his son, Brian Herbert. There was a seventh story that could have been potentially written.
Mm.
But he also found this out last night. Both Brian Herbert and the guy that worked with him on the graphic novels, his name is Kevin J. Anderson. Brian Herbert came across like 1,000 pages of stuff from his father that entailed like the prequel potential.
Hmm.
So I don't know if there will ever be a written form of a prequel to Dune. Cause again, like when you're like, here's the story that takes place the year 10,900 and something, whatever. Right. Like, again, there's a lot of places you could go for the prequels. Like, here's, you know, the way Dune ends up, because that's what I was asking you, and you're like it's mentioned in the book, kind of, that, you know, like, how long ago was Dune different?
Yeah,
you know, and then how did it become to a, from a paradise, saying, how was Earth, and then how did it come to a completely, you know, desertized planet that has giant worms,
yeah,
that are as big as skyscrapers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's really interesting to kind of, I think it would be cool to see maybe a movie or two that it went that route, but you know, that remains to be seen. We might never ever get something like that, where it might be 20 years.
Never say never.
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, and I don't know if someone will try to pick up the other movies that go on, because if, you know, Denis only covering the first two books, then there's Children of Dune, that's book three, that, you know, I don't know if someone else would come in and take the reins of, or, you know, maybe the studio would be like, you know, Denis, look, you did a great job with, you know, these three movies. Would you be willing to come back and do like another one or two, you know? Or maybe he'll be like, no, I'll be EP, but, you know, I'm going to do other things.
I mean, he's currently working on four different movies right now.
Yeah. So again, if he's too busy, then totally get it.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah.
I'm sure Messiah gets greenlit this week, and then we'll be good.
Yeah, no, I totally think so as well. Like, again, overall, this movie was very, very well done. We've been poking things that are different from the book standpoint, but again, I think acting-wise, just as a recap, acting-wise, it was great. Score was great. Cinematography was great. You know, from my recollection, I didn't have any gripes with any dialogue. I think the dialogue was well-written. And, you know, I think we haven't really talked a lot about Rebecca Ferguson, but I think she was great in the first movie. She was great in the second movie.
Yeah.
I'm not good in it a ton, but, you know, especially with her scenes that she, you know, that she was in, definitely you felt the way she changed from being just Lady Jessica to now the Reverend,
Mother. Yeah, she changed drastically a little bit.
Yeah, she's got like, you know, like mood tattoos on her face, and like, yeah, her mood and tone has changed. And you know, it was interesting too when she's like speaking like telepathically to the old Reverend Mother,
mm-hmm.
Mean Mother, and she's like, should have taken a side. And she's like, there are no sides. Like,
you should know that, Reverend Mother.
Yeah. And she's like, nah. There are sides now.
There's sides. You're on the losing side.
Yeah. Get wrecked. Go home. I don't know where home is, but just, I don't know.
So with all that said, what would you rate it? Without involving the first part, what do you rate part two? Because you can't rate.
You know, I'd probably give it a solid 90.
I gave it a 91.
Yeah.
You know, and like I texted you this morning, I think it does require a rewatch.
100%.
And that score may change, but I do want to, you know, go back and rewatch it, and I do want to go and, read the book, probably starting tonight, rereading it, so...
Yeah, as soon as my delivery comes in, I will start reading it. And, you know, as we said earlier in this podcast episode, we definitely want to have a revisit. So, if you've read the book, or if you've watched both movies and you kind of have your own thoughts, which I know everyone will. Especially for the book readers out there, I'm just going to prefaces. We're going to do another take, and we're going to build upon the things that we said. But once your recollection for parts that happened in the book are, just written down for comparison's sake, and then once I've finally read the book, I'm going to take notes on my parts and maybe just either highlight pages in the book or, mark things on like, hey, page whatever, like, this is in the movie, or something that was left out or changed, again, just to kind of get a better grasp of what we read and then what we've seen from the movies, and then just, I don't know, have like a better analyzed breakdown. And I'm sure by that point we'll have a digital version of Dune Part Two.
Yeah, I'm sure,
within our grasp. And honestly, I'm really looking forward to reading and getting all the graphic novels, because I love graphic novels. So third one comes out in July.
That'll be cool to see.
Yeah. We might do like a YouTube video for that, since it's more actually, visualized.
Yeah.
So I might try to like scan some pages and then throw it on there, and then we can just kind of talk over them,
That'd be cool.
Yeah. Again, I think just over one viewing, I like part one over part two. And again, that's not to harp on any reason, any regard for this movie. It is, we're seeing, again, I want to see it at least one more time in theaters. And yep. We saw it in a 60 by 80 foot IMAX
massive screen
with insane sound. So like visually, we got the best of the best. Audibly, we got the best of the best. Like, I think at one point my Apple Watch was like, this is loud. So I'm like, no, I hear that. I hear that watch. But, I would like, if I could have the ability to say thank you, Denis, for making these movies, I would, and I doubt I'll ever hear this podcast, but it's just like,
never say never.
Yeah. Maybe not. I hope everything that he's seen is just like, these guys are idiots. But just understand, like, this is just our critique.
It's our opinion, man.
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
Everyone take it with a grain of salt.
Right. No, exactly.
Don't take it too personal.
I don't expect everyone to agree with us. And, I've already seen some other reviews out there that have been giving it high praise, but I've also had a couple of things to say about it. Like,
yeah,
great movie, 9 out of 10 movie, but this, kind of just my gripes with it. And again, like, everyone's going to have a gripe with the movie, I think. And mm-hmm. I don't believe it's a 10 out of 10. Because my 10 out of 10s are ahead of it.
Yeah. No, I agree. But, highly recommend going to see it, of course.
Yes. Don't skip out on not seeing this in the theater. Especially if you can see it in a good theater.
Yeah, because
you want that full experience. Trust me.
It is insane, some of these shots that you get. I mean, they're beautiful. Oh. They're huge. You feel how big some of these things are.
Yeah.
And the scale of it. So it is, it's pretty sick.
Yeah. I actually, you just said the word with like world building. Obviously, yep. With the way Frank Herbert built the world of Dune, I definitely stand by, you know, Denis Villeneuve's way to interpret it and mm-hmm. the way he brought it to life. I think he really did do a fantastic job of that, especially with, you know, Getty Prime and seeing more of it with the Colosseum and everything like that, you know, a little bit more of the Emperor's Planet, you know, which we didn't get to see a ton of, but
saw a little bit.
A little bit. Same thing with like, we didn't get to see a lot of Caladan, but we saw, you know, bits and pieces of it. And, you know, again, the whole build up to the Holy War, you know, and it's just, I definitely want to see where that all leads to, and I can't wait to read about it too, because as Paul said, if I go down this path, it's a holy war and like billions of people are going to die.
Yep.
Not millions, billions.
Yep. And only time will tell what happens.
Yeah. Cause it's like you said, if Dune is restored, what happens to the spice? There is no spice, which means there's no galactic travel.
Which means there's no, yeah. Because no, the worms make the spice. Can't have the sand without the worms.
No space guild.
Can't have the spice without the worms.
What a predicament they might find themselves in.
So.
We'll just have to see. So, yeah, that'll do it for us for now. Again, you can be sure to have another Dune breakdown more than likely in a couple months from now. We'll give it a rest. We'll read. We'll watch again. We'll write down some stuff and probably have it a little bit more formalized in a breakdown. I think we tried to kind of keep this to a little bit of a formula here, but hopefully everyone followed along enough and has some things to take away with it. You know, let us know your thoughts. If you know us, hit us up. If you don't know us, hit us up on Twitter, on X.
Yeah.
You can find us at Plot Strikes Back, so there's no the. I mean, you might still be able to search for it with using the, but yeah, give us a follow, hit us up, like, hey, like your podcast review on Dune Part 2. I agree with some of the things. I disagree with some of the things. Like, again, all that's welcome. You know, if you just disagree with something, we're not gonna, you know, say you're wrong or tune you out. It's definitely cool to see what people's thoughts and opinions are on it. Like, if you give it a 10 out of 10, cool. That's on your opinion scale. So,
yep.
I definitely don't think this movie deserves a bad rating by any means though either.
No, you know? God, no.
So if it's like a 5 out of 10, I'm like, that's something I'm going to disagree with you on.
This is no lower than a 90. So
I would say I could see some people maybe giving it like an 8 out of 10.
Wrong.
Well, yeah.
Wrong.
You could debate Austin on that.
Debate. Hit us up on Twitter and debate us about it. How about that? Let us know. You know where to find us.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, thank you so much for tuning in. We always appreciate the follows, the shares, all that kind of stuff. So, but yeah, stay tuned for, you know, future episodes and content. And that'll do it for the both of us here on The Plot Strikes Back.
Bum, bum, bum.